morning, everyone. Welcome to week number 14 of COVID leave of absence. Probably if you think back about 2 months ago, it may have felt like COVID leaves were burning up your desk. You were struggling to look for answers through the thick smoke of ever-changing COVID rules and regulations. But as the weeks have passed, your questions have decreased, and it seems to us you've tamed the flames of COVID leaves. Instead of a raging fire, it appears that you are basking in the glow of being COVID-19 leave of absence masters. Today is likely the final COVID leave and question and answer forum. We will continue them if they're needed, but it's looking like you guys have this fully under control. We are considering a future format, which we will discuss with you at the end of today's forum. But for today, we invite you to join us in a fireside chat hosted by CEO Benefits, Tracy Sewell and Ken Mizuno, and Risk Management's Disability Management Division, Courtney Bishop, Jess Alanez, and myself. Through today's fireside chat, feel free to snuggle up with your furry coworker as we go through the question and answer session, which will be presented by Ken and Jess. Then take some time to grab your virtual s'mores as we provide you with updates on paid family leave and Prasagia as provided to you by Courtney and Ken. Then we hope for the final part of today's chat that you can engage in some great conversation and idea sharing with your leave of absence community here with us today. So before we get started, we're just gonna do a little bit of housekeeping so that everyone knows how to participate. Courtney, can you share that with the team, please?
Yes, welcome everybody. We have muted everyone so that it cuts back on background noise. So if you would like to raise your hand and ask a question, you can go down to the bottom right hand, the three dots, click more, and you click on the option to raise your hand. If not, you can go ahead and use the ability to chat in the chat room, and we are monitoring that so you can ask your questions.
Great, thank you. So Tracy will be monitoring the questions as they come in, and feel free to jump in at any point today. Very informal, very chat version of things today. So let's go ahead and get started with our questions and answers. I'll turn it over to Ken and Jess.
Okay, so leaving off where we left off last, question number 76. When an employee gets sick with COVID-19, is quarantined and eventually gets well, can he come to work as soon as he decides to go back to work?
If an employee tests positive and was out for active COVID-19, the employee should obtain a release to return to work. The release can be obtained from the employee's personal physician, or they can call EHS to request assistance with the return to work clearance.
Okay, question 77. An employee got exposed to a sick person, i.e. wife caring for husband who has COVID-19, but tested negative and has no symptoms. Is it her decision to come back to work?
It depends. Usually, if an employee tests negative and has no symptoms, the employee can return to work. However, if the employee's family member remains actively symptomatic and the employee remains to have exposure with that person, we would need a doctor's note to clear them to return to work. EHS can be used for these types of return to work clearances if the employee does not have a personal physician.
Okay. Question 78. What requirements or what documents are needed, if any? To provide assurance that the employee coming back to work is COVID-19 free.
If a negative test is obtained and employee is not symptomatic, the employee is deemed released to return to work. If tested positive and employee was out for active COVID-19, the employee should obtain a release to return to work. When returning, employees must comply with face covering mandates, social distancing, and the temperature screening procedures.
Question 79. Who do we need to inform if someone is in the office, got tested positive and sick, and currently quarantined? Everyone? HR, managers, or staff only?
Senior manager or designee should be advised. They will follow the proper protocols for informing necessary individuals based on the circumstances. In no instance should the employee's identity be shared with individuals beyond the senior manager or designee, as this information is HIPAA protected.
Okay. Question 80. Who do we need to inform if there is someone in the office who tested negative but exposed to someone who is positive and sick? Everyone, HR, or managers, or staff only?
The employee needs to be present confirmation of the negative test to the senior manager or designee, and is then released to return to work. You would handle communication of clearance to return to work as you would any other matter.
Question 81. What if an employee has symptoms but tested negative on COVID-19? Can he go back to work?
If tests come back negative, the employee can return to work upon resolution of symptoms. Once a negative test result is received, the absence would be handled as you would any other illness-related absence.
Okay, and we have an additional question, a follow-up to question 78. Is a verbal from the employee stating they got a negative test all we need?
So the answer to that question is no. The employee should receive some confirmation in writing that the test is negative. So we need something indicating that they have a negative test result, and then that should be sufficient. If they go through public health, they're getting it. It's via email or they're getting a written letter one way or the other. But they should be getting something in writing. And again, if they go through their personal physician, they can obtain it there too. But we would want confirmation that the test result is negative.
Okay. I'm not seeing any other questions coming in.
Oh, can you advance the...
I'm sorry. I thought we were at the end. Whole new page. There we go.
Okay. Moving right along, question 82. Do you know if Employee Health Services can provide a COVID-19 free clearance test to employees who had the virus but has recovered in order for them to go back to work?
EHS does not necessarily provide COVID-19 free clearance tests, but they can assist in providing return to work clearance for employees who have negative tests. Have the employee call EHS to require assistance.
Question 83. If multiple employees at work in one office are found to be COVID-19 positive, is notification to public health required?
Public health has recommended questions of this nature be directed to their communicable disease department at 805-981-5201.
Okay. Question 84. If an employee is on leave of absence because of an underlying medical condition but is not providing a medical certification, do we continue to extend their personal leave? Or what other options do we have?
Due to the unprecedented impacts of COVID-19, it is important we clearly and reasonably communicating and documenting expectations and requirements regarding what is needed for certification and in what time frame. If the employee fails to provide certification documentation, the department can decline to approve the leave.
Tracy, can you advance? Question 85. The latest order doesn't have an end date like previous orders. How long can one be out? I have one employee out due to the age order and does not feel safe yet in returning to work.
Every request for accommodation must be evaluated on its own facts. What may rise to the level of undue burden in one circumstance might be a reasonable accommodation in another. Regardless, the employee must provide documentation in support of the requested accommodation. And upon receipt of that information, we need to engage the employee in the interactive process. The interactive process should continue at regular intervals to determine if the accommodation remains reasonable.
And before you guys continue, I'm just going to jump in on this one because I think this will be an issue that the leave coordinators that you all are going to continue to see as we move forward here, as things reopen and kind of our COVID numbers ebb and flow here over time. The most important piece of this is that you are communicating consistently and regularly with each of your people that are requesting accommodation. An interactive process really is your tool for consistently ensuring whether or not the accommodations requested remain reasonable or not. To the person who asked the question's point, when this has an end date, none of us knows. And so you have to work these accommodations with the anticipation that you could be looking at something that is very long-term. And that's why having accommodation interactive process meetings at really short, regular intervals will help you to better manage when a thing remains reasonable and when it may, in fact, become an undue burden.
Okay, moving along.
So it looks like we might have one question before you guys move on.
Okay.
Can we request the employee to return if they are in the category of the age order?
So yes, the employee can be, you can request that they return. If they feel though that they fall within high risk and there's issues for them that they want to have discussion that they do not feel that it's safe for them to return because of the age category that they fall in, then again, you need to engage them in that and understand what are the circumstances that are of concern for them and what are the potential accommodations. And during this time, we want to be very, very, we need to be very clear about the idea that we need to always be exploring other potential accommodations. So teleworking, alternate work schedules, all those things. But yes, you can certainly ask the employee if they feel they're able to return. And then that's going to go again back to case by case, whether an employee within a certain age category feels comfortable in returning or not.
Were there any questions?
Looks like you guys can keep going. Thanks, Ken.
Okay. Question 86. Here is a scenario. Employee works and teleworks and has completed attestation forms. The most disaster pay hours reported in any given day is 4 hours. The days of usage are sporadic. The employee is at will. Does an at will employee need to complete leave paperwork?
Yes. Any employee requesting leave must complete leave paperwork.
Question 87. I know we were provided the accommodation form to use from our last Zoom. I've been told that this form is not really a good form to use for COVID-related reasons. Will there be a form created that is more in line with COVID?
Currently, we do not have a COVID-specific accommodation form. DMD will review this request and will advise if a revised form is created.
And I'm just going to, if I can, jump in on this one really quickly, too. I'm not sure, you know, and I understand there may be reasons where people feel that the accommodation form that is the general accommodation form may not speak to some of the particular accommodations that you might be able to offer in a COVID situation, social distancing, PPE, things of that nature that might be available to an employee where they have concerns about being high risk that aren't necessarily clearly stated on the regular accommodation form. You're always able to ask for clarification on those points. You can certainly, in your IP discussions with your employees, make sure that there's certain points that you want the doctors to know about maybe your operation that are unique to how you're handling certain things that you think are important for the doctor to know and share clarification. So you can certainly provide that in the interactive process. And we, as we said, we will review the form inquiry, but where it's a little bit tricky is that more often than not, what you're likely to be getting in these situations is that COVID-19 itself as a diagnosis is probably not the thing that is going to be the thing that people are looking for accommodation on, in that it's usually it's short and hopefully not terribly severe for people. What you're looking for accommodation on is the fact that you have some underlying health condition that is not COVID-19 that necessitates the accommodation. And this is where it starts to become tricky because, of course, still those conditions and those issues are still fully HIPAA protected. So it's a balancing act of how we're asking people to sort of put the information forward without requiring them to have to disclose any information specific to why it is they feel they're high risk. So we will continue to look at this issue, but I would encourage you to make sure that if there's ways you feel you could potentially accommodate an employee, that you're sharing that information in the IP, you're asking them to seek clarification from the doctor specific to those points so you can understand if you can accommodate or not. You're absolutely allowed to do that in the interactive process.
All right, we do have a question that came in. Do we need to do LOA paperwork for extra help employees who are currently unable to work due to age or underlying health condition?
Yes, the answer would be yes.
All right, and do we need to require extension paperwork even when nothing has changed, still over 70 and underlying health condition?
Well, we still have to verify that the condition or the still exists, so you still need to do extension paperwork. So yes.
And I think that goes back to the importance of the extensions are when you're engaging people. As I said before, is it something that we're doing for 6 months? Is it something that we're doing for 6 years? Unfortunately, none of us knows the answer to that. So you need to be evaluating these things and requesting the extensions and engaging people in the process, in the interactive process at each of these intervals, so you can continue to evaluate what is a reasonable accommodation versus what is an undue burden. And keeping your process and your timelines and your documentation consistent throughout is very, very important to being able then to proceed if you reach a place where a certain requested accommodation is deemed to be an undue burden.
All right. Oh, yeah. Is age still in the public health officer's current order? I thought it was removed, is the new question.
So I think we can go back certainly and clarify this for sure. I thought that there was still some statements regarding age for certainly 70 and older. I know there was discussion at a point in the governor's order, there was a statement about 65 and older. So we can make sure that we distribute the most current order to ensure everyone has that information. I would, again, suggest that for any employee that you have, whatever age they are, if they believe that somehow they fall into a category and that makes them high risk or rises to a certain level of concern, again, in that discussion, I would ask them to point you to which order are they looking at and sort of what are they using as their documentation source to begin the discussion of, I believe that I have a certain protection entitlement and I might need an accommodation. But we can certainly, add to our intranet site the most current order so that people have those exact words to be looking at when they're having these discussions.
Okay, and then Someone wants to clarify that extra help staff need to complete LOA paperwork. Yes, the answer is yes, right, Ken? These are considered employees. They are entitled to FMLA, you know, all of the entitlements, just like any other employee. So they need to be completing leave of absence paperwork.
That's correct. I mean, if you look at the 30-day requirement to be employed with the county, then they would fall into that group. But ordinarily, that may not be the case. But during this time, yes, they would be required to fill out paperwork. We also need to track any type of natural disaster pay that they may be receiving. So that's another element that we would be able to reference if they filed for leave of absence.
Okay, and for an employee who is 70 and has a heart condition and diabetes, whose medical condition is stable, is it reasonable to accept one doctor note for up to 3 to 6 months, depending on the circumstances of the pandemic? I don't want to require the employee to have to go back to the doctor unnecessarily just because we were requiring it.
And, you know, again, these are tricky questions because there's, you know, there's no certainty. So is it acceptable to take it for 6 months and perhaps in 3 months we find that COVID is no longer in California? Heavens knows that's what I'm rooting for, but I can't tell you what the future holds. So my only caution to you is the longer you allow people to extend out on an accommodation, if the fact patterns change in a broader way, becomes more complicated to try to undo those things. Only you know your operation well enough and that person's position. Again, it's case by case, fact by fact, to understand whether that is really a reasonable time frame for your operation. So you have to weigh out the uncertainty of all things versus your operational needs to decide whether you want to go as far as 6 months. Ordinarily, we would not recommend such long time frames because so many factors can change. But those are going to be really agency-specific decisions.
Okay, next question. Oh, they keep pouring in, so my screen keeps moving. An employee who refuses to return to work cited they feel unsafe and they have an underlying condition. They've been seen on social media out on trips. Can we use or mention social media as proof in an interactive meeting?
So this one is tricky. There's sort of a variety of legal positions on this, and certainly depends on how, you know, you got the information. So you should not be actively out trolling employees who are on leave, right? Looking for things. I think there's a difference between, is the manager a Facebook friend with the employee and everybody knows that and the employee is well aware of it, and the manager shares with, you know, with you as the HR person, hey, they're out doing other things. You know, be careful. We all know people can post things that aren't necessarily accurate portrayals of what's happening in real time. So, you know, there could be a picture of them at the lake that was a wonderful vacation from 3 years ago, right? So I think that information is information that if used, in more sort of broad general terms, can be helpful to, you know, the manager noted that you guys are, you know, that they have access to your Facebook information and that you're posting a lot of things where you're out and about. Are you able to get out and about outside of the workplace? You may be better pointed to, instead of referencing those things, sort of ask questions that, you know, are, have you been out? There's some, you know, some people in the department think that they have some information that suggests maybe you're doing a lot of things outside of work, as opposed to pointing specifically to the social media itself. But again, as I said, if the direct manager has that information and the employee is well aware of it and they're sharing it and posting it, then yes, I think you're allowed to at least say, we do have some information that you're willingly providing to your manager that suggests that you're really doing a lot of things outside of work. Is there a reason you are able to do those things and not be here? And are we able to start talking about how we can accommodate you in a similar manner here at work that would allow you to be here in the same way that you are in the general public.
All right, so there's a few questions that have come in about extra help employees applying for the county's natural disaster pay. So the first question is that true that extra help employees can apply? Another person says extra help doesn't have standard hours. They aren't guaranteed hours. Some only have a few hours a year. How can they be eligible for natural disaster? How are the number of hours determined? The form just says employee, so I'm not sure about the answer to that. I would have to go back and read the board letter, I think. Do any of you know whether extra help employees can apply for that?
I'm going through the board letter now, but it's lengthy, so maybe we could circle back to that one.
Okay. Thank you, Ken. All right, and then the last question was, student workers also need to complete LOA paperwork? Yes, right? Because they're extra help.
Yes. Yep. Same category.
And then one person was told by the county that extra help was not eligible for a natural disaster. The board letter specifically says regular permanent employees. Okay. Thank you, Brian. That helps. Ken will keep looking, but thank you. We appreciate that.
I vaguely remember that, so I apologize for that.
Yeah, no, that's
question rarely comes up.
Right. Okay. And Becky confirmed that Kelly Akers told her that extra help are not eligible. Another person says they're not eligible.
Thank you, everyone.
Yes, that's why we need all of you.
Yes.
It's a team effort for sure.
It doesn't change the answer, though, for them to fill out paperwork, though.
True. Yeah. Still need to complete leave paperwork.
Yeah.
Okay.
Any more questions?
More questions.
All right. Question 88. When an employee tests positive through one of the drive-through testing sites, they are getting a phone call with the results. What kind of documentation do we need in order for them to return to work, or do we even need anything? They can request an email copy of their test results, but there is no medical advice that accompanies those results. They are told the public health will contact them, but that took 5 days to happen with our latest employee, and then an additional 2 days for the employee to get the clearance email, which was beyond the date that she could have returned. I referred her to the CDC guidelines, but she was asking me if that was okay. She was asking me if it was okay to return, and I am not comfortable giving her that clearance.
If the employee tested positive, they will need to provide a medical clearance from their healthcare provider to return to work. Employee health is also assisting with return to work clearances.
And I will just quickly jump in on this one. I know that recently, and I don't know if it's because of an uptick in testing, we have had a few employees who have had this experience where they've gone through and they've been negative, but it's been difficult for them to get the confirmation that they're negative. I have spoken to some of our doctors over at Public Health, and they had suggested that we should try to encourage employees to use the public health clinics listed on, and it's the list that's on our intranet site that talks about if you have an employee who believes they have an exposure, as opposed to going through some of like the college, there's at some of the colleges and things, they have the drive-through lines as opposed to the actual clinics. We, for some reason, those particular locations apparently right now seem to be taking a little bit longer than the clinics that are on our list that was provided on the intranet. So if you have employees who happen to say to you, I think I may have it, I need to get a test, it may be helpful to both you and them to point them to those clinics that we were provided, in that seems to be going just a little bit more timely at this point.
Okay, moving along. Question 89. When an employee tests positive and it is a clear result of work exposure, We have been giving the employee the workers' comp paperwork and advising that it is available if they would like to file. They all keep asking what benefit would be to filling out claim paperwork. They are already eligible for natural disaster pay or EPSL, and thankfully none of them have really been that sick at all. So they see at more of an inconvenience than a benefit. Besides keeping track of who is offered the paperwork and who chooses not to complete it, is there anything else we need to consider?
Under the governor's current executive order, in effect until July 5th of 2020, we must provide an employee claim form to any employee who is required to report to the worksite, not their residence, within 14 days. Oops, there's a little black box. 14 days of positive test / diagnosis.
Keep going. There's a second paragraph.
Yes, there's a second.
Sorry about that. It is up to the employee whether they want to file a claim. Potential benefits afforded under workers' compensation are medical treatment and wage loss replacement if they are unable to return to work after they have used the COVID-specific sick leave. The decision of whether to go through the workers' compensation claim process is a personal one that is wholly at the employee's discretion.
And I'm just going to jump in on this one just one more time too, because some of these ones are complicated. It's hard to give you an answer that touches on all the issues. But whoever submitted the question, you are correct that in mild cases, which we certainly hope will be overwhelmingly the case if our employees get it at all, that people may say, well, I already have had my time paid for and I took a test and was told to go home and don't even have any medical treatment. And so for those individuals, I can understand why they might say, why would I file a claim? Because I've already gotten everything that I need. But again, unfortunately for us, we don't know what's going to happen when somebody is diagnosed. So absolutely, the one thing that concerned me a little bit with the question and how, and it just might've been how it was worded, is just to reiterate, if a person has COVID and they have been at work the past 14 days, at our direction, the work site itself, not at home, but actually the work site, we must give them a claim form. It is, we don't make the decision whether we think it's work-related or not. We just give them the form. And then from there, it's up to them whether they want to apply. I would certainly think if a person required more treatment, found themselves unable to return after 2 weeks, those might be individuals who are incentivized to file as opposed to a more mild circumstance. So it's really going to be personal, but I just want to make sure people are clear that no matter what, if they've been to work in the past 14 days, you have to give them the claim form.
Okay, and then let's see, a follow-up question. We started having employees return to work on June 8th on a staggered schedule. I would assume that the 14 days started on June 8th as far as if it's a workers' comp eligible.
So that would be true if their diagnosis is within 14 days of June 8th. Yes, you would automatically have to give them a claim form. Obviously, if you have anybody else who for some reason was directed to report to the site for some reason prior to June 8th, they would have to be given sort of a special circumstance there. But yes, so if you've asked them return, it would be June 8th. From there forward, if they've been at work within 14 days of their diagnosis, you would just automatically give them the claim form.
Question 90. I have a few employees extending their leave until the end of August and another one until the end of September. If the employees are not providing a school letter or website link anymore and they are submitting a written statement, do we continue to accept the written statements even though the school calendar year is over and the students are currently in summer break?
Going forward, and with orders being lifted, we cannot accept written statements from the employee. It must come from the provider. Presagia has been updated and will now be requiring users to certify documents. Written statements from the employee are not eligible to be certified at this time. If the summer camp or daycare is closed, we will need documentation from that provider. Although some summer camps, daycares, etc. are still closed, there are several options that are currently open and operating under CDC guidelines.
All right, we have a question going back to 89. I'm gonna move this down a little bit. Additional info, agencies, departments will also need to consider OSHA log for work-related exposures and COVID time off work.
And that's true. That's a good reminder, Anthony. And I believe it was in our last Zoom or the one before that we provided you in the document what the requirements are as it relates to the OSHA reporting part. So if you're not clear on that, feel free to go back to the document, which is already attached on the intranet site. It has the specific information for you. It's actually the same, it's the same Zoom where we talked about the governor's executive order. Some of that information is detailed in there. So it was probably two meetings ago, but it is, we do have that information on the website if you need it.
Okay, and two follow-ups to question 90. What if their normal childcare is provided by a family member who is older and not comfortable providing care at this time? I think, as we said here, there are other options. I think another good place to point employees to is on our work life website. We have a child care list that provides discounts to county employees. So I would refer them to that. And then there's a person that says there aren't enough daycares open for all the children. What if the employee cannot get their child into daycare? We've been told Patty Zoll has been on different webinars and calls with local child care providers and child care provider agencies, and they are saying there is plenty of child care available. So please refer them to that list, and you know, hopefully they'll be able to find something in there. But yeah, they should be able to find some kind of child care. Okay, so we've got, let's see, this is really long. We have an employee on an intermittent leave due to COVID for school closure who is now requesting extension until the end of September. Employees mentioned that he's forced to request an extension because the summer camp programs and preschools are still closed. I would question that because I know some summer camps that are actually open. The employee has three children and expressed that two of them are usually enrolled in summer camp at YMCA. The youngest one goes to preschool during the summer. We requested a written statement from the employee, including the link to the website as supporting documentation for the leave extension, but he only sent us the information for the preschool where his youngest child attends. After further verification, it was confirmed that the YMCA is open for summer and the preschool mentioned by the employee is also open with limited children capacity. What is the best recommendation in this case? Is it okay to approve the leave until the beginning of the school calendar year on August 26th? So
your best recommendation is you need to have, I mean, although these are sort of unusual forms of accommodation, right? Because usually childcare isn't something that is something we are required to accommodate as an issue per se, is that you need to be engaging these employees in the interactive process and looking to see, if they still have entitlements left under the EFMLA, well, that might be one thing and you need to go ahead and say, we'll approve it. But you need to start having the conversation of, we received the one thing about the preschool, but we have information that's readily available that the YMCA is open. And that, to Tracy's point, and these are very personal conversations, and I would caution everyone that Chuck is saying, is it just me or that have we lost our sound? Can people hear us?
I can hear everyone. Oh, I can hear. I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. Monique says. People are saying they can hear us. Sorry, Chuck, it's just you.
Sorry, Sorry, Chuck.
So I think in the conversations about childcare, and this is going to be the one that's going to be tricky for you guys because it's going to become more readily used, but is that childcare is not just a single thing. When schools were closed, that was the issue, is that parents, of course, relied upon the schools during the school year. Now that we're to the summer, childcare isn't a singular thing. If an employee still has protection, most certainly you need to look at very closely that you would need to probably approve that leave. But if they do not, the discussions you need to start having with the employee are, what are the other options? If the place they normally use is closed, then they need to explore other things as you evaluate with them what is reasonable. And you need to engage them in really regular conversation to set expectation. And again, what you approve or don't approve is going to largely be based on your operation, what they can do, can they telework, or those kinds of things, or those aren't available. But you really do need to be engaging these employees in interactive discussion to try to see if there is a reasonable accommodation, and if there's not, whether you're approving the leave or is the leave an undue burden.
Makes sense. All right. If they normally use family but can't, what if they can't afford it? So all of those are not issues that we're going to be involved in. It, like Catherine said, interactive discussion. There's always personal leave if, right? Like if they really feel they have to be out, whether the agency can accommodate that is a whole different thing. Let's see. Okay, and then how are we going to deal with this going into the new school year when school is not going to be open 5 days a week like normal, when parents don't normally pay for childcare, can't afford childcare? How are we going to support our employee parents?
It's a good question. It's the question that, quite frankly, I believe will be the next wave of this, is that, you know, don't get too comfortable, you leave of absence experts out there, because come August, when we were faced with that, the question that we don't have to our team's magic eight ball is not telling us yet, will there be additional benefits that parents get through any source if schools really aren't open in the fall? And that's where I think you have to, you know, be willing and ready and able to be very nimble and flexible. Come August, this discussion now pivots yet again. I do know that LA Unified School Districts has indicated that although they're not going to be 5 days a week, they are going to look at trying to provide childcare on the days where kids aren't assigned in different ways. How effective will that be for all of our schools and all of our children? Still to be determined. And I think we need to we're going to have to take those things when the facts are actually before us. So for right now, I think what you're dealing with your employees is, this is not the school year. We're here at summer. Summer allows a lot of flexibility for different forms of childcare. Has your employee explored those things, and can they use some of those more broad options? And then when the school year hits, we will have to pivot yet again. Tracy, would you mind letting Chuck back in?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, and then the next, what if one of the children has a medical condition and cannot attend a summer camp? So I think this would be where you take your COVID hat off and go back to normal. What would you normally do if an employee couldn't send their kid to summer camp because of a medical condition? That's where a family care leave would come into place. Right, Ken?
Right, exactly.
Okay. I don't see any additional questions. Oh, is Catherine at Burning Man?
I feel like it looks like I am. It looks like I am burning.
She is the Burning Man. Okay. Another question. If the agency does not want to accommodate the personal leave and the employee does not return, would we change the leave to AWA? How long should we give the employees? I think to Catherine's point. Oh, go ahead, Ken. I was just going to say, to Catherine's point, it definitely has to be an interactive discussion. I don't think we can like say one way or the other. The agencies have to decide what they want to do, right?
Right.
And I think somebody threw in a follow-up after the IP, can you? And again, you know, this is where you guys are, this is the hard job that you do and that we definitely appreciate, is that it's every case on its merits. Have you explored all the options? Have you looked at all the choices? But yes, if you get to a place where ultimately the leave is an undue burden, then you can decline to approve that leave. I would only caution everyone to consider the unusual, unprecedented times we're in, and make sure that you think to yourself, if this person decides to litigate because they don't agree with you, did you reflect reasonableness, fairness, very clear communication throughout the process before you got to the refusal?
I think I'll add that to our notes. Okay. I don't see anything else. I'll continue to monitor if we move forward.
Sounds good. Well, in the little bit of time we have left, if you're done snuggling with your furry coworkers, grab your virtual s'mores and let's head off to our next little part here. Ken, do you want to start off on sharing some information on paid family leave?
Absolutely. I thought there were a few more questions.
Good. You're right. There are more. Oh my gosh. Sorry, I didn't see the next page.
So the next question is, how long can we extend the intermittent or continuous leave due to COVID-19 school closure, assuming the new calendar year starts on August 26th?
School closure specifically would be approved through the end of the last current school year. If the employee is still requesting to be out on a leave, the reasoning for extension of the leave will be different. If it goes from school closure to child care closure, then no action is needed in PERSAGIA. Both of these fall under the same category. However, for example, if the employee's child's summer camp is not open, they will need to provide documentation of that closure.
Next question. Can the department deny the leave extension if the employee does not provide the above supporting documentation?
If the employee does not provide supporting documentation, then yes, the leave extension can be denied. However, we want to be sure that prior to denying the leave request extension, where COVID entitlements may apply, that we're documented reasonable efforts to ensure the employee is aware of the requirements and expectations regarding what is needed in order for the leave to be considered for extension.
Can you advance, Tracy?
It just has a lag.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
It's okay.
So our last question, and I'll elaborate a little bit more on this question. I have read on the EDD website that PFL, or paid family leave, has been increased to 8 weeks of pay effective July 1st, 2020. Do we know if this new norm, if this is the new norm, or if this is will eventually go back down to 6 weeks?
Our research shows that this change will be temporary change. However, according to SBS 83 that was signed by Governor Newsom on June 27th of 2019, this amount is due to increase to a full 6 months by 2021-2022. The 6 month is to be used for bonding purposes only and represents the total duration of two parent claim PFL benefits. Governor Newsom is set to deliver his proposal this November.
So in my research, I did find that we are obviously going on July 1st from 6 to 8 weeks that will be increasing next year, or possibly into 2022 for a total of 6 months. That 6 months, though, is split between the two parents. So now what you'll be seeing, instead of 6 weeks of pay, you'll be seeing 12 weeks of pay, our wage replacement pay, during the time that they're on leave. So historically, when bonding is approved, it can be approved for up to 12 weeks. And the employees historically come back after six because they are no longer receiving any sort of state wage replacement benefits. And what you'll be seeing now is employees who will be taking probably the full time off so that they can get the full benefits of 3 months off as opposed to the 6 weeks they previously were able to get for pay reasons. California, even though we were the first state to start with the paid family leave program in 2004, we fell behind over the last recent years when the trend has been to give more time off for family reasons, family care, bonding especially. So now this new SB 83 is kind of bringing us in line with other states where they are already giving more time than just the 6 weeks. So these are things that are on the horizon that you'll be seeing that will be changing next year and the following year. I'm not sure if it's going to be in a graduated sense, if it will go from 8 weeks to maybe 10 weeks and then change from 10 weeks to 12 weeks, or if it'll go from 8 weeks all the way to 12 weeks. So we'll fill you in as we get more information.
Great. Thanks, Ken. So Courtney, do you want to share some information about some changes in Prosagia?
Yes. As some of you have already noticed, there have been new worklist items popping up in your cases. Some of them are along the lines of review EFMLEA request forms, or review generic COVID forms, or review request COVID request forms. If you do see those in your work list, we are going to request you guys hold on those for now. We are getting some clarification from Prosagia as to the processes going forward, and we will be sending out a amendment to the COVID Prosagia manual that'll give you step by steps on how to process these worklist items. And it seems to be going along the lines of our LOA request form and our original documents that we have for COVID already. So this won't be additional steps in requesting information from the employees. We should already have this information in our system. So it shouldn't be too big of changes, but we will be sending out an amendment to our manual by next week.
Great. Thank you, Courtney. So maybe while we wait to see if there's any final questions coming in, I can share with you what we hope to be a future format of a forum with all of you that will not be COVID specific. We're planning that we will begin in August, the first Thursday of every month, to host a monthly forum that will be a disability absence management forum. It will allow you to submit questions on any topics that you might need assistance from DMD, benefits, or any of your colleagues throughout the county. It'll be an opportunity to share questions, comments, ideas, and get feedback in real time. The format will allow you to provide your questions in advance for things that are maybe a little bit more complex or multi-level questions. So we have an opportunity to sort of think those things through, but also to encourage a format that really allows you to engage with one another. We hope it allows for continued sense of community, regardless of where each of us is working day to day, week to week, as we move forward, that it's an opportunity to build a sense of team and a spirit of community that helps us to continue to provide great service to all of our employees throughout the county who find themselves facing need for leave of absence or accommodation. Any final questions from the group, Tracy?
I don't see any.
Okay, great. Well, thank you all for your time and participation over the past few months. We know that it has been an extremely challenging time on lots of different levels for all of you. We hope very much that these COVID Q&A forums have been helpful. We want you to know that from where we sit, your efforts have shone more brightly than any of the fires that we have for you here today. We hope you stay safe, stay well, and we look forward to seeing all of you in August.